Anywhere there's a stage and a mic and you need one person to anchor the day, you find me. There's this concept about mastery. Anything you spend 10,000 hours on, you become a master at it. So all of that was just gaining more mastery hours. Yeah. The thing with laughter is it's infectious. And sometimes you may not really be funny, but someone's laugh makes the funny. Being in control, you could pick someone's laugh and use that to create funny. What I would say is life should be about learning, and the institution in which you gain your learning doesn't have to be boxed.
Guys, today's guest needs no introduction. Andy Sarfo, aka Simply Andy, joins us today to talk about all things entertainment. From releasing an album at 12 years old to working his way up to hosting some of the biggest weddings in the world. Guys, this is one you do not want to miss. We chop up so much, and guys, I genuinely have never laughed so much in my life. And if you like what we're doing with the show, guys, make sure to like, subscribe, share, comment. You know how we do. Now, enjoy the show. Hi guys, welcome to another episode of What My Best Friend Does, where we talk about what your best friends do, because let's be honest, nobody knows. Today, I'm joined by my best friend, the entertainer, Andy. How you doing, bro?
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, this is the first handshake.
First handshake, man. Well, best friends, man, that's what we got to do, man.
That's what we got to do.
Normally a hug, but the cameras and the mics are in the way.
No, yeah, lovely to have you here. Thanks. We like to start with a little icebreaker. What did you want to be growing up?
That's wild. What did I want to be growing up? Man, I think different stages, man.
Yeah,
I wanted to be a dancer, you know. First time I saw Michael Jackson on screen, I tried to moonwalk. You know what I mean?
Successful or unsuccessful?
Very, very badly. I wanted to be a martial artist. I grew up in Ghana. I spent some time in Ghana.
Yeah.
That's where I'm from. And it's like, we used to watch Chinese movies all the time. Mm. We used to grow up watching Killer Mali. Anyway, you know, so I wanted to be, you know, Bruce Lee. I wanted to be Jet Li, all those guys. You know, I wanted to be everything because...
The one.
I wanted to be Matrix. I wanted to be Neo. And yeah, like, I wanted to be a pastor because I grew up in church. Mm. There's many, many stages and, you know... Wanted to be like an artist, wanted to be an actor. It just kind of changed. But actually, everything that I said I wanted to be, I was kind of creating like a mental position for it
that
to rest.
It.
Yeah, like, you know. And so a lot of those things that I wanted to be, I've kind of done.
I love that. So, you know, you mentioned the fact there that you've kind of done a lot of those things. Let's take it way back. You know, you mentioned the fact that you're from Ghana. Can you talk us through kind of your upbringing and your journey through the various stages, I suppose?
So grew up in Ghana. I was born in Nigeria. Crazy.
Okay,
it's first time I'm saying that on stage. That's crazy. It's gonna be like Nigeria jollof, Ghana jollof, which one do you like?
Wait, for the record,
I like Wache, that's it. You know, jollof is so like over flame that he cares about jollof.
Really?
Like, from when you have to fight about jollof, that means you don't have enough like cuisines in your artillery. Like, are you crying about jollof?
That's a way to change the perspective.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's jollof, it's basic. It's like, it's the most basic food.
But the fries.
Apart from white rice, it's basic. Bro, no, let's talk about it.
We can talk about it. So, let's go.
So you're from Nigeria, right?
Yeah.
What's your favorite Nigerian dish?
Ah, you're putting me on the spot.
No, but I know it's not jollof. Jollof might be there because it's basic. It's in the fridge.
No, but mine is jollof.
Yours is jollof.
Plantain chicken. Yeah, let me tell you something. I'm not a pounded yam guy. I'm going to admit that.
Listen, have you tried ayamashe? Do you know what ayamashe is?
It's like the
peppery sauce.
Yeah.
Listen, if you try white rice and ayamashe, you can't be talking about jollof. Like, what? And that's a Nigerian dish.
Okay.
A Ghanaian dish, if we're talking about wache, which is like rice, beans, and the assorted stew. Oh my God.
Look
You ain't got time for jollof. Like, what are we talking about?
Okay. It's not.
Yeah, like, I leave those guys to have those jollof wars, man.
But, okay.
Yeah.
All right, so we digressed. All right, take us.
But yeah, I was born in Nigeria. Yeah. At a time where, you know, there was a lot of Ghanaians in Nigeria. My dad was teaching in a school in Ibadan, Nigeria. So I was born there. And then we left, I think, a year and a half after I was born. Went to Ghana. So I went to Ghana when I was like a year and a half, 2 years. And I stayed in Ghana till I was 10.
Wow.
And then came over to the UK. But yeah, so the whole family moved to Ghana. And Ghana became all I knew. So the language that I learnt, the family, the community, the village that, you know, invested their hand in raising me were all in Ghana, in Kumasi, which is the Ashanti capital. Mm. And yeah, man, so that was the journey. My dad went to the UK. I think he came to university. He came to study in the UK. And then my mum followed. And then my siblings and I were in Ghana with my dad's sibling just for some time. And then at some point, we came to the UK to join them. So that was my journey in Ghana.
How was it adjusting from Ghanaian life to English life?
It was wild, man. Like, I remember my first shock was... We got off at Heathrow. We arrived at Heathrow, and my mum was waiting for us because we travelled on our own. So they were like, "Why are these kids travelling on their own?" We got here and my mum met us and they did some interviews, whatever. And then we came out onto the other side and we got into a car. And my first place coming to you was Hackney.
Wow.
And it was crazy because as soon as we landed, I remember a white man asking me for change, like asking us for change. I was like, oh my gosh. I didn't know there was poor white people. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it was wild. Like, I was like, rah, I thought, you know, growing up in Ghana, I thought, yeah, I mean, all white people are rich. They own the world. So, yeah. I mean, what's the problem?
Yeah.
Then we got here and it was like all of these kind of things. So it was weird. I realized that people weren't polite. Thank you and please.
Hmm.
But growing up in a Ghanaian community that is kind of embedded in our language, you know, even in the tree languages, you know, Kriapim tree is like Mipao Cho, like they'll say please or I beg of you, can you do this, or I beg of you, thank you. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it kind of precedes a lot of sentences. So I came, I was very, you know, polite, respectful adults, blah, blah, blah. But I would see a lot of other young black children just acting up and going crazy. So it was a bit weird. Experienced some beef between Caribbeans and Africans. I was around for that. I was around for Nigerians versus Ghanaians. I was also around for that. So it was just weird. It was just really interesting. It was like a melting pot of so many different people that I'd seen on TV, in movies, and I was able to kind of see them in the flesh kind of thing.
I love that. Do you know, as you've just said, you're around for Africans versus Caribbeans and was it Nigerians versus Ghanaians?
Nigerians versus Ghanaians, yeah.
I don't know if you've seen the video, but he's like, you ain't comfortable in your own ends. I'm around. That's what came to my mind that you said that. But no, I love that. So obviously you're an entertainer and you mentioned the fact that at different stages you wanted to do different things. Like, how early did you start entertaining, I suppose, would be my question.
So while I was in Ghana, age maybe 6, 7, whatever, I would like gather like pots and pans and I'll start drumming.
Wow.
Like, I was just quite, I wouldn't say musical, but I was just on making noise to kind of capture an audience, right?
Yeah.
So I would do that. And I remember there was a time, maybe I was 11, not too long after we'd come over to the UK. I was at church with my dad. And my siblings, we were getting the church ready, arranging chairs and that sort of thing. We did that in the good old days, man. It was vibes. And while we were doing that, I was cleaning the church. Not church, church. Because E-R in the middle of two consonants is church, not church. Sorry. I'm sure you must have seen that video. Anyway, so I was in church just tidying up and then I started singing.
Yeah.
And then the pastor, Bishop Francis Sarpong, walked past. And he heard me sing and he said, oh, what a good, you are a good singer.
Mm.
You have God in your voice. you will lead praise and worship this Friday. And then the following Friday, I led, I sang some songs at church. And then I remember maybe like 11 and a bit, I sang, and then everyone put like £5 notes on my head and they're giving me money. It was like a Nigerian wedding. Yeah. Nigerian party. Yeah, the dollar's but it wasn't dollar, it was pounds. Yeah. It was real money. And yeah, so it just started from there, and then the pastor just showed a lot of interest in my skills or in my talent, as it were, and he just would give me a lot of opportunity to get on stage to perform. Mm-hmm. And then my dad saw, you know, Cash Cow, he's a very businessman. Oh, this boy is very talented. We will record you an album. Let's go to the studio. Mm. And then we went to the studio. Bless Uncle KB, passed away now. And Pastor Dan as well. They supported me. And we came together and released an album at the age of 12. It was a tree. Yeah, man, it was a hit. It did all right, man. I traveled the UK. Bunch of churches performing the songs
and like
selling tapes.
Yeah, and like as a 12-year-old, like, do you understand, like, in that moment, like, what you're doing? Because I don't think there are the typical 12-year-old is creating an album, touring, making money. Like, did you understand the gravity of what you're doing?
No, I definitely. I mean, my, you know, rest my dad as well. He's passed. He chopped all the money.
I shouldn't laugh.
I definitely didn't understand. No, it's no, I didn't. I just enjoyed being on stage and just like singing these songs, man. I think, you know, you could be a performer and not necessarily be in entertainment. It's like a talent. It's a gift, and 100%. Depending on the container that you're given, that will then allow you to present that skill in whatever facet you're able to present it in. And I just enjoyed, you know, some would say, oh, center of attention. Maybe that's what it was. But I just enjoyed being on stage and doing something that I really loved and cared about. So I wasn't thinking about it. I think years on, I look back at it and I'm like, right, bruv.
You did a lot.
Do you know what I mean? On Saturday morning when some of the guys were going football, you were going mate, football, and then in the evening, you're going to a church in South London to go and perform, you know, and then they'll put money on your head and then you never see the money. But it was a vibe.
I don't know what the lesson is there.
There's no lesson. The lesson is you are not old enough to hold your own money.
But yeah, okay. So you've obviously started performing so young. So as you like progress through secondary school, like, do you have an idea as to, what it is you want to do? Like, do you want to go into further education, end up in university? Yeah, can you talk us through, after this experience, what you start to feel?
So when I recorded the music, my head teacher at that point in a school in Hackney, it's closed down now, not because it was bad, but the government didn't understand what was going on in the school. Mm-hmm. So they shut it down. Okay, it was bad. and not a lot of us made it out, but so the head teacher bought a lot of the tapes as well, just to kind of, in, you know, invest in this student that he's got in the school that's doing this thing. So I think my future was kind of set at that point that, you're going to do more music. You're just going to do more. And so the plan was to go off to college and do performing arts and, you know, to university to do, you know, music, technology or something, just so that I would be more comfortable in the studio, mixing, mastering and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was what, because of the album, I think, and also the performance in church, I think everybody just saw me as, oh, you are the performer, you are the worship leader, you are the singer, you are the, you know, whenever we did plays at church, you are the actor, you are the, so it was an entertainer. So I think I landed into it and it hasn't changed.
Okay. So just following on from that, like, so did you go to university do performing arts?
So I did go university, and at the time I went just for my mum, because my mum just was like, oh, all my children will go to university. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, fine, I'll do it, but I'm gonna do something that, you know, is in line with what I do. So I went to Kingston University. I did media technology, and so that was me trying to understand a bit more about what happens behind the camera, because I'm always in front of, not always, but I enjoy being in front of the camera, and that's what I've always done. So it was about going there to fully understand the whole process of that. And then I fell in love with university. So then I ended up doing it for me. But yeah, I mean, I benefited a lot. I learned about lights and, you know, why the bounce has to be, why the light has to be in a certain place. And so even when I'm on shoot, I'm on set and I'm doing stuff, I'm a bit fast. I fast up myself sometimes. Yeah. And I'm like, I think the light is in the wrong place. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Because it's just these things that you've kind of picked up and you've learned through time.
So question I always like to ask my guests, for you, like, did you feel like university was beneficial?
Before I went, no. Like I said, I did it because my mum really believed that all her children needed to go to university. She came here as a FOB or whatever they call it, like, you know, first generation. They didn't really, she spoke English, but she hadn't really embedded herself in the community as much as maybe she wanted to. And her kids are here now. So it's like, right, they're growing up. She wants them to also take advantage of the opportunity. So I did see it that, okay, I'll just do it for mum. But when I got there, it was an amazing opportunity. There was an ACS, Afro-African Caribbean Society, which again was a launch pad for me spending more time on stage. So I hosted a lot of the events with one of my brothers, Eddie Caddy. We did a lot of things. And so it just kind of invested more time in my craft and it kind of built me. I was able to do events, you know, at the bar that was in Penrith Road in Kingston. I was able to do events in and around the area. There were club things that I was on the mic, just talking rubbish on the mic, not knowing all of that was just, you know, there's this concept about mastery. Mm-hmm. Anything you spend 10,000 hours on, you become a master at it. So all of that was just gaining more mastery hours in what I'm doing now. So I went for my mum, but when I got there, I realized actually, no, it's for me.
And then, so off the back of that, to any, you know, young and up and coming entertainers who are potentially looking at this, listening to this and deciding on whether university is for them or whether they should go out straight, you know, and start working. Yeah. Like, what would your piece of advice be for them?
Do you know what? Like, there's many roads, man, many routes to, there are many ways to get to London Bridge and it's not just over the bridge.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You can go over Tower Bridge. You can do a long thing and go through Blackpool Tunnel and cut through Kidbrook and navigate to Catford. I'm talking like I'm
My geography bad as well, so I'm just
No, but I'm saying there's many routes to a destination.
Yeah,
100%. And so, yeah, not everybody is supposed to travel over the bridge to get to London Bridge. Some people want to do that and it suits what they're trying to do. What I would say is life should be about learning, and the institution in which you gain your learning doesn't have to be boxed.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So yeah, you might not go to university, but you need to go to drama school. Do you see what I'm saying? Or maybe you don't need to go to drama school, but you need to be around people who are fully versed or well versed in that craft that you can learn from.
Yeah.
You know, my dad has a line which he says, experience is the best teacher, but if you learn from someone's experience, it saves you time and it's wiser. It saves you time because you don't have to do what that
person did.
You
have to make the mistakes.
Do you know what I mean? So, but not learning or not making mistakes of somebody next to you is also learning. Mm-hmm. So you're in education, you're in school. So the route to education is plenty. Same way the route to London Bridge is plenty. As long as you don't give up learning, it's cool, man. You don't need a degree if you don't need a degree.
Yeah.
But if what your plan for your life requires a degree, then my friend, get
it. They get it.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I've never been on set shooting a sitcom or a show and the director says, oh, Andy, show me your degree.
Yeah.
He hasn't asked for it because the route in which I'm traveling, it doesn't require that. But yeah, I think I've answered.
Yeah, no, you have. You've done more than answer it. You finish university.
Yeah.
And once again, there's going to be listeners who, you know, they want to understand, you know, what is the next step? So for you, obviously, like we've said, like you're an entertainer. You've mentioned you've started hosting now. You've got the music. What is the next step for you after university?
So the next step for me, when I left uni, at that point, I was in a rap group called VOV, Verses of Verbs. And we're just writing narrative rap So there's a verse, it goes, I've seen this chick kissed by the Jamaican sun, it's ludicrous. How she move her hips, plus she's very young. You might have seen her in the grimy streets of Camden University, Camden Town or Oxford University. She's been around hallucination space, unicorns with purple teeth. Helped decide to break up this relationship, but left with lonely cold nights with Mary Jane whispering, set my body upon fire, but no, so you're listening. So that was the kind of raps we were writing. So that whole verse was about marijuana and the damages that it causes if you smoke a lot of weed. So we're writing narrative. So we'll pick an object and we'll personify the object and we'll make a rap about it. That's what we did. And we did very well. Went around again the UK doing all sorts of shows. So for me, because I was already in that line, we just needed more shows. So we did more shows. But what happened was, before we would perform a song, my brothers on stage would ask me to introduce the songs. Again, an opportunity for me to add more hours to my mastery.
Yeah.
So that was an opportunity for me to introduce the songs, make people laugh, get people's attention before we did the songs. And then as time went, I then went fully into hosting when we broke up.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, everybody's journey is different. If you finish university and you want to go down the entertainment route, you want to be an actor, okay, there are agents that are available. So you need to locate yourself a showreel. Obviously, you can't do a showreel if you haven't done any shows. So, but there are loads of monologues that are out on the internet that you can read and memorize and record yourself, do some self-tapes, and create a showreel and just put yourself out there. So when we started, I say we, when we started out, a lot of the opportunities that are available now, or a lot of the access that is available now, wasn't there. I couldn't tell you after uni, this is exactly what I'm going to do. But thankfully, there are people that have made so many steps and so many mistakes that you can actually look at someone's journey and say, you know, I'm actually going to do this.
Going to do this, yeah. I love it. And you mentioned the fact that, the introduction of those songs is what kind of help to build the hours towards the hosting. Can you talk us through, like, how is it you have the hours, but how do you go about winning business
in some ways, man? Like, I'm spoilt, like God has spoilt me, because like I pray, and my prayer has always been that God should like order my steps.
Yeah.
And whatever's mine is mine. If it's not mine, then it's not mine. Basic.
Yeah.
And so from the moment I did my first event, from the moment I did my first event, it has then cascaded into doing a second event.
Like referral after referral.
Yeah,
after
like,
referral,
I mean,
after referral.
Like, imagine being in a room and doing a wedding for one person, and then by the time it's like 5-6 years later, you actually did 10 weddings that were in the same room. Like, as in the 10 people were there at that wedding and you've done their weddings too. And then when they did their wedding, they invited people who weren't at the other wedding. They see you and then they invite you. So it's been very, what's the word I'm looking for? Organic. It's been very organic for me. So it's very difficult for me to advise. I can advise because I know what the route should be. If you want to be an MC, do an event for free, record it and make sure that it's a good edit. Put it out on the social platforms. Sadly, that wasn't my route, because when I did it, Instagram didn't exist.
Yeah.
Reels didn't exist. But 18 years later, I'm still here and I'm still hosting weddings. So I've been spoilt, man. Like, God just brings stuff my way. Like, even today I was in a car and I got a call and I was there with one of my brothers, big up to Gabs, Gabriel. And we're just talking about like a project with a massive TV company. And because somebody gave them my name. Do you know what I mean? So it's weird. It's organic. And God has just spoilt me.
Yeah.
And that's what I just want to keep hammering down on. The fact that I've just committed it into the hands of God. So in some ways, it's made me a little bit lazy. But it still pays, because God still makes ways for me, man.
One thing I will say, definitely commit it into the hands of God. But there also has to be action, right? And you've also had to deliver, because some people hear that
Jesus will take the will. Yeah. But
You got, you still
Jesus
got
a, has to take you somewhere. Yeah, like, do you know what I mean? If you don't have a destination, Jesus is just driving on a long road. I don't know, maybe is the M4 the longest road in the country?
Once again, my geography.
You know,
man,
it's my geography, right? Do you know what I mean? You're going to be on the M4, M1 or whatever, and you're just driving. You know, I've made myself available. You know, I heard something from Timo, who's like an amazing brother. He was talking about opportunity and preparation. And the cross-section of opportunity and preparation is luck. And there is a way to improve or increase that middle ground by preparing yourself a lot. Now, every opportunity I get to, you know, perfect my mastery is preparation. So actually, when I say I commit it into the hands of God, God just presents me more opportunity. And because I'm ready, it bangs.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So yeah, you're right. We don't want anyone thinking, sit in your house, you need a job, put your CV in the computer, and don't send it to anybody and pray.
Yeah.
The only job you're going to get is jobless. That's all you're going to get. But yeah, man, that's...
I love that. And yeah, for any like, aspiring MCs, we'll focus on that for now. Like, you've mentioned the fact that you can do an event for free, record yourself. Not everybody is blessed with like being funny, being able to... Yeah, like read the vibe of a room and adjust accordingly.
Yeah.
What would you say makes a top quality MC? What skills?
Top quality MC. That's a great question. A top quality MC is being able to be comfortable in any situation. Like, you have to be unshakable. You have to be. Let me go back. You have to be unshakable, but you also have to. You can be unshakable. You can be shakable, but as long as you're in control. Does that make sense? So
yeah,
as in, your response can't be, they made me do this, or they made. Do you know what I mean? They didn't make me. Like, you're in control. So actually, in every room you're in, you need to be in control.
Yeah,
it's weird actually, because there's some like power dynamics or like some control issues or something. Do you know what I mean? But it's like, you're on stage, something happens that is out of your control, but it's your responsibility to get control of that and make it work to your advantage.
Yeah.
So for me, it's the ability to be able to improvise. It's the ability to be able to see the room, read the room, and make it work. You talked about being funny. You don't have to be funny. Not everybody's funny. But every room needs an MC.
It helps though.
It helps, but not all. I mean, okay, I've MC'd at funerals before, right?
Yeah,
I can see your face, yeah. I've MC'd funerals, and because I'm funny, or because I've got jokes, or because I can make jokes, I'm funny, that sounded so arrogant. Because I can make jokes, I made sure I spoke with the family, the bereaved, and asked them the mood they wanted to set for the day.
Yeah.
And they said to me, Andy, do your thing. And everybody cried and laughed, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
But somebody else could have done it and done it very serious, and it would have been fine, because it's a funeral. Are you with me? Obviously, if you're not funny, don't go and host a wedding. If you're not funny, don't go and host a comedy show. Do you see what I'm saying? But if you're hosting a corporate gig, I mean, I've done corporate gigs where there really hasn't been much to do, but just reading off a set of things where it's quite, but again, because I can make jokes, I only feel control if I only feel I'm in control when I'm making a few people laugh.
Yeah.
So that is my, that's my superpower. And so you will find it when I'm in the room or when I'm on the stage. But I know loads of MCs, respectfully, who are not funny, but they're very good at what they do.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're called presenters. Maybe funny people are called MCs, and not funny are just presenters. I don't know what it is, but I think there are many ways to present yourself. You could be funny, or you could be serious. You could be naturally funny, or you could be scriptedly funny. Do you know what I mean? There are so many different ways.
100%.
An MC can present themselves.
And you know, talking about being in control of every situation.
Yeah.
I know that you're funny, right? Or you can tell jokes, whatever you want to say, but not everybody is going to find you as hilarious as everyone else.
Okay.
In situations where, like, you've told a joke and it's not banged, maybe the way you thought it, how do you maintain that control, I suppose, is the question.
It's like I said, you have to be in control in the moments when you don't feel like you have control. So you tell a joke and somebody doesn't laugh. Like, in the moment, my brain is doing 5,000 things. I'm thinking, fam, you're dead, bro. Like, do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or like, bro, I swear you've got 1,000 hours, bro. Right? Are you a master? And everyone is just like watching your face. Thankfully, it hasn't happened. Yeah. Not to me. Thankfully. But there are 5,000 things going through my head. And actually, I could imagine myself saying, bro, I actually thought that was funny. And that would make somebody laugh.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Because the moment you say something's not funny, but then you say to people, bro, was that not funny? Bro, I thought that was funny, bro. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
And then at that point, I could imagine myself going into myself, like as in thinking out loud, but on stage. And somebody's going to think, this clown, like, what is he doing? One person starts laughing and then everybody starts laughing.
Yeah.
The thing with laughter is it's infectious. And sometimes you may not really be funny, but someone's laugh makes the funny. And being in control, you could pick someone's laugh and use that to create funny. So just about being aware of your environment and just being prepared to just jump on any situation that gives you back the control for the room.
I love that.
But it's years though, as in like...
Of course.
Do you know, but some people have it straight away and some people just don't... I've seen people who didn't have it and years later they've got it.
Yeah. I hear that. And I think just like hearing you talk there, like even I've just taken a takeaway, right? Like, not everybody in the room might find you funny, but if you find that one person, like you said, who has the funny laugh and you focus on them and using them as the infection point to the rest of the room, you can turn like a neutral into a positive. 5,000%. So I think it's great advice.
5,000%.
The next thing I want to say, so you touched upon the fact that you can MC a funeral.
Yeah.
So there are like many different ways you can host.
Yeah.
Can you, take us through some of the different mediums within which you host? Is it majority weddings?
Majority weddings, birthdays. It's weird. As I've grown older, I realise that the events that I'm doing are also maturing. So, like I said, it's corporate events. I host an event in Tower Hamlets with the mayor. The mayor's ball, they call it, every year. And it's just the mayor of Tower Hamlets coming together with loads of bling-wearing mayors. And I have to go up on stage and just like entertain or kind of keep them entertained. There's, like I said, there's weddings, there's baby showers, there's like club events where someone might do an event and they want you to just jump on the mic and MC with a DJ. So I've got a lot of DJs that I work with. And if they've got an event where they need someone to chat on the mic, I would go ahead and I would just jump on the mic and you know those guys like, yo, insane, everybody, you know, all that stuff, just talking on the mic. I do stuff like that. And again, like I said, funerals, I try not to do too much of that because funerals are very, very like deep for me because of certain things that I've been through myself. So. But yeah, I've done some funerals and they were like friends of mine who we sent off. And yeah, to be honest, wherever there is people getting together, I've done like festivals, I've done, do you know what I mean? I've done party in the parks, do you know what I mean? Any event where someone has to anchor the day, I'm there. I've hosted church events, gospel concerts, comedy shows, anywhere there's a stage and a mic and you need one person to anchor the day, you find me.
I love that. And just like hearing all of the different events, to somebody who's like, I see myself doing this as a career, like, you don't need to talk about specifics, but I'm thinking in terms of like payment and like negotiating fees, how do you ensure that you're receiving your value for every project that you work on? And sometimes are you just doing it for free because it presents like another opportunity?
That's stress. Yeah, stress. That's a stressful question.
Oh, is it?
Okay. I'm stressing out. if I say I've done things for free, some people are going to be upset. They're going to say, "Rah, Andy, rah, hold on a minute. Rah, I called you for my mom's 50th.
Let's talk hypothetically.
And you told me that you don't do free events. And now you do free, bruv, allow it. No, I think when I started out, it wasn't about getting paid. It was about doing it because, I just came on stage and everybody was laughing. Mm. It was about that. And then I realised, I'm travelling for these things. It's costing me to come out. So then we just started charging a little £200. And there was a little £300. And then it was a lot. I don't know if the tax man is watching. But then it became gift aid. We're doing it for gift aid. But yeah, so I think it's about reading the room and reading the journey. Do you know what I mean? So people want to come in and want to say, I'm charging £1,000 as an MC. Bro, sis, nobody knows you.
Yeah.
Like, what have you done? Because ultimately, it's about what you've done. It's about your mastery hours. Maybe you created your mastery hours in a different medium, but nobody knows. So because people don't know, they're not going to be comfortable.
Back to the beginning, yeah.
To pay you that kind of money.
Yeah.
I received some advice from one of my uncles, Uncle Nigel from Favour Catering. And I got a call one day, and a guy called me and said, Andy, yeah, I saw you hosting a wedding in Greece, Santorini, and the DJ was not that great. I won't tell you his name. So I jumped on the decks and I was DJing and hosting at the same time. I had just started learning DJing, so I was DJing and then on the mic, and then he was like, I saw you hosting this wedding on video because you put it out on social media, and I've got a wedding in Dubai and I want you to come and host it.
Mm.
I was like, all right, cool, tell me more. And he was like, all right, cool, so I'm going to sort out your flights. So accommodation, and I'll give you like £300. All right, cool, fine, sorted. And I was like, sorry, I don't charge £300.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, but it's Dubai though, bro. Like, what do you mean? I'm flying you to Dubai, bro. Like, and I said, yeah, I don't care for Dubai. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I've got family. I don't care to leave my family to come and collect £300 just to go out and see Burj Khalifa. Like, what's that all about?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's about, and then what Uncle Nigel said to me was, Andy, not every event is your event. It's about knowing your value. So just to go back to your question, it's about knowing your value and not allowing people to play with your mastery.
Yeah.
So it's about knowing your mastery, knowing what is worth to you, and knowing when to say no. Mm. And it's hard because it's money at the end of the day. You're like, right, if I was working corporate, like that's like £200 a day, bro. I got a gig for £300 in Dubai. Yeah. I'm going to be next to Burj Khalifa. Like, I'm going to take it. But the reality is, well, what's your value? Like,
yeah.
If that is how you can be bought. Everyone's been bought for their time. Do you know what I mean? But if you can be bought for that price, then big man, do your thing. But yeah, that was not me. Respectfully.
No. I love that. We've spoken a lot about mastery and putting in the hours.
Mm.
Have you drawn inspiration from... You said that not too many people had gone before you, right? Because there wasn't Instagram, this, that and the other. Mm. But maybe had access to TV.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you saw some of the comedians in America, some stand-up. Yeah. Like, where is it that you've drawn inspiration from?
Do you know what? My idol, I don't believe in idols, but the only person... alive that I kind of draw massive inspiration from is Jamie Foxx, because I grew up watching him as a musician. Well, firstly, as a comedian. Firstly, as a musician, but nobody knew him. Then he became a comedian. Then he dressed up as Wanda, and he did his thing in Living Colour. And I went off to do road shows, went into acting, killed acting,
yeah,
and then went into biopicking, killed that, and then his music career was revived again,
yeah,
killed that,
and he does the craziest impersonations,
and he's my guy,
yeah,
like, as in, I was so happy I got to meet him. He came to London just before his accident that he had, and I got to take a picture with him, I got to chill with him, and we're just vibing, like. And yeah, so I would say he was the guy because...
And he lived up to expectation when you met him.
He was such a cool guy. It was such a cool guy, man. Yeah, like, he was such a... My friend had been telling him about me. and I didn't know. So when he saw me, like, oh, you're Andy? Like, I was like, nah, stop it, bro. I'm fanning out right now, bro. I'm like, oh my God, JB. Well, obviously, man's a bad man. You know what I mean? So, man, I was like, yo, well gone, JB. Yeah, welcome to London, my guy. And I got home and I cried like a baby. You know what I mean? I was like, I'm never washing my face again. But no, like, he was the guy because, like, on one hand, we can do comedy. On another hand, we can do acting. But we also love music, man. Like, I'm in the studio. I'm recording music. And I can do a few voices here and there. I'm like, Jamie's my guy. Do you know what I mean? Because a lot of these guys, they're like maybe double threat and or triple threat. He's like quadruple threat.
Yeah.
And I always saw myself in him, you know. I didn't get to tell him when I saw him, but I'll see him again soon.
So I'll let him manifest
know.
It.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I will. I will see him again.
So yeah, we've touched upon the music. Mm. We've touched upon the hosting. You've mentioned it there, like you're a quadruple threat. Like, where else has your talent taken you?
Where? So the scripture in the Bible, which says your gift will make room for you, and it really has. Like, as in, I was invited to see Prince Charles before he became king. Yeah, I was in a room, like, you know. Hi, hello, how are you?
Are his fingers really that?
Like, it's big, bro. It's
got yeah.
Long hands, bro. That skeleton, that was crazy. But yeah, it was really cool. Had a little chat, obviously, as he does in it. Oh, hi, how are you? I'm fine. Oh, okay. I was like, oh, hi, hello, Prince.
I love white rice.
I was like, have you tried that jollof? You know what I mean? He was like, oh, I'll be going to Ghana. I'll be going to Ghana in a few weeks. And so what would you advise me to do? And I said, he lived in Ghana when he was young, I think years ago. So I was like, bro, you know what to do in Ghana.
You're
bro.
Just saying, you're just chatting.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Just make sure you eat fufu and come back vibes. And try Ghana jollof. That's it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I've been in presence of him. I've been in the presence of the king of the Ashanti kingdom, Asante Hine. And these are people that the world, I guess, value and consider to be great. My gift has sent me all over the world. I've been to the Caribbean. I've been to Africa, Southern Africa. I've been to America. I've been to Europe. I'm going to Asia later on this year. Like, wow. It's taken me all over the world. And these were things that I wouldn't have just done on my own, because some of these places that I've gone, they weren't on my bucket list to travel to. But I've gone there and I've fallen in love with it.
Yeah. And as well as, like, obviously your gift taking you worldwide, you've also dabbled in like TV as well, right? So can you talk to us about how, what you've done has led to some of those TV opportunities?
Yeah. So, I remember there was a time I was hosting a birthday party or something in a comedy show in some club. In a venue, and the producer of Meet the Adebanjos, Andrew Osayemi, was there. And Meet the Adebanjos was a show. Well, then it wasn't. And he saw me, and respectfully, everybody on the bill was dead. They were not great. Those were Andrew's words. He said, bro, you held a show, like you made a show. And I was like, oh, thanks, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, I'm doing an event, I'm doing a show, and I'd love for you to come on as a comedic consultant. So I went to South London, Brixton somewhere, I believe. Cole Harbour, one of those roads in Brixton.
Yeah.
And we did a table read, and we read this script, Meet the Adebanjos, and I was like, wow, this is crazy. The Asians have Goodness Gracious Me. The Caribbeans have Pork Pie and Desmond's.
Mm.
But Africans didn't have anybody apart from, there is an old African saying. So I was like, this is momentous, like, this is amazing. So we did some work, we created some characters, rewrote some characters, and they were like, look, Andy, you have to be in it, bro, because you smashed it, you've built this character. So then I was in it. So we shot season one, season two, season three, which are all on Netflix.
Yeah.
So yeah, my gift got me there. The show was played in Nigeria, played in South Africa.
And am I right in thinking that, like, you shot it and then is it like years later it was picked up by Netflix?
So we shot it and it did, you know, the then Ben TVs, OBEs, I can't remember the other TV shows, TV stations, but, you know, our little urban kind of channels, or African channels, we put them there. And then obviously Andrew and Deborah, you know, they needed to make their money back. It cost them a lot of money to do. And so I think years later, Netflix approached them, and or they approached Netflix, and Netflix gave us an opportunity to have it on Netflix Africa. Mm. So it was most watched comedy in South Africa, Nigeria, Ghana, blah, 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 for a while. And then they kind of gave it the okay. And now we're on the main Netflix
platform. And obviously that was a long time ago. Mm. You mentioned the fact that, you know, you've had some meetings about some other TV opportunities.
Yeah.
Is that something that you want to hone in more on now at this stage of your career?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy it. I'm currently shooting a pilot for a show called... I can't say. I'm shooting.
Okay, yeah.
It's a pilot called this, and these characters are like that, and it's amazing, and then tomorrow someone's going to steal it and do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm currently shooting a pilot for a show, and I love it, man. I'm on set, and I'm thinking, learning these lines, man, is amazing, you know. You go in, you looked at the script, you've learned it, you forget it, you turn up and you think, oh my God, what am I going to do? And they say action and you're like, you get straight into character and the words just come to you. I love that, man. It's amazing. I would love more. I would love more of those. I think I'm speaking to some really important people in the space. And so I believe that that is about to change. But hosting, I can't get away from, because I enjoy it, man. I enjoy it. I enjoy being on stage and making a group of people laugh.
I'm sure you get asked this all the time, right? But if you had to pour your energy into one of the disciplines, which one would it be?
Stress. Bio, who sent you? No, later. Which one would it be? I think he'll be acting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Manifest that then.
I think he'll be acting, yeah. Because I love it, man. I love it.
You love
it? Yeah, I mean, I love all of it. It's unfair, actually. Do you know what? Scratch the answer. Please, re-edit, cut the thing, and delete it. Yeah, I can't pick. I think it's all... The reason why I love Jamie Foxx is because he can do a one-man show, go from telling jokes to sitting by the piano, making up a song on the spot, inspiring everybody, and he's triple-threated.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, vibed with the audience... Throw some words out to me. Let's vibes. Like, so for me, it's like the reason why I went into hosting in the first place was because it was one of the only platforms where I was able to demonstrate more than one of my skills. Because as a comedian, you've got like 10 minutes to come up, 15 minutes to come and make people laugh. You can't start dancing. Nobody cares. Mm-hmm. Like, just tell us some jokes, man. I might want to tell you 3 minutes of jokes and make up a song for 4 minutes. Get everybody involved and then do a dance routine and bring people up and we can do it together. So the only environment I presented that was emceeing.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be fair to choose any one of those gifts, but I definitely have enjoyed doing more acting and I'd love to do more of that. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to do less of anything else.
Okay, I hear that. Being an entertainer, what would you say the most stressful aspect of it is?
The stressful, I'll say that there are two things. Having to say no to things that you know are really, really good. Yeah. But whatever it is that was in you that said you had to say no, you had to listen to. So that's been difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But thankfully, whatever's that's happened, there's been something around the corner that has superseded and made that even better.
Yeah.
The second thing is having to wait until your turn. Waiting is very difficult. It's not a skill that a lot of people have. Because in waiting, you get tired. You know, self-doubt sinks in. It might be your turn to do something, but actually, no, it's not your turn. You just wait. And in your waiting, you have to be building and preparing and working on your craft and doing as many things as you can to make sure that when luck is created with opportunity and preparation, you can actually go ahead and do that.
Yeah.
But actually, when you're preparing, is long, it's tedious, because you actually don't have a date when luck is going to come your way. Maybe I should get rid of luck because I don't believe in it. you actually don't know when God is going to say it's your turn. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And so until then, you have to just keep working at your craft. So if it means that you do have to do things for free, you might have to gift people with some opportunities. You might go to an event and then the MC is not really that great. And then you might speak to the MC and say, oh, do you know what, bro, try this. And then they try it and it works. And then they might want to bring you on stage with them. And you're like, right, wow, who do I invoice?
Yeah.
There's no invoice here. And then you jump on and it becomes a double team. And then you smash that event. You go home thinking, right, one of us got paid and it wasn't me.
That would rattle me.
Yeah, but it's like, but seeing that everybody left happy was enough for me. Are you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
those moments are hard. In the moment, it's exciting, but when you've left, you're like, rah, bro, that man got a gig for free, bro. You know, so those moments are hard. To wait until it's your turn, very difficult. And to say no to things that look amazing, but they just weren't for you.
I love that. And if we turn that on its head, what would you say the most rewarding aspect of being an entertainer is?
Most rewarding part of this is a couple calling you 10 years later and saying, Andy, we're doing our 10-year anniversary and we can have anybody else there but you.
Wow.
Yeah. And we're flying you to Ibiza to do it. And I'm like, bruh. You just called me an old man. You know what I mean? But with the flight, it sounds good. But you know what I mean? So it's like, there are loads, man. There are loads. Another MC saying to you, oh, Andy, do you know what? Like, when I started, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be where I am now. And I'm like, rah, maybe I shouldn't have helped you because now I've got all the gigs. No, I'm joking. But you know what I mean? It's like, there are loads of rewarding moments, man.
I love
like, that. A couple walking away knowing that you've added value to their special, to one of the most happiest day of their lives.
It should be, hopefully, if they don't do it 3 or 4 times.
Next episode. What's up? You know what I mean? Andy, I'm calling you. I'm getting married again. I'm like, well, thanks for calling me, bro. I'm available. Wild.
And on that, like, so, oh my God, I've lost my train of thought because man just started spitting. No, what I was going to say is, yeah, so you mentioned the fact that that people have been inspired by your journey. How is it you've given back and helped to develop the next generation of up and coming entertainers?
Yeah, I mean, I've always seen that as one of my purpose. To develop or quote unquote inspire or, you know, invest in the next generation.
Yeah.
Like Usher Raymond wouldn't be here if Michael Jackson didn't do what he was doing. And Omarion wouldn't have done what he did if Usher Raymond didn't start what he was doing at 12, 11 or whatever. Do you know what I mean? So I've always seen that right, Andy, you've been called for something. So you can't get like too relaxed. You got to do it because someone has to see you to do what they need to do. Mm. Through my journey, I've had very, very close mentorships with quite a few people in the hosting industry or hosting community, MC community, where they will testify that, you know, it was maybe a couple of gigs I gave them, a couple of, you know, tricks at a trade I gave them or long conversations, or they came off stage and they bombed and it was like, yo, Andy, I don't know, I can't do this anymore. Like, bro, listen, cool. Mm. It happens. Not to me. No, I'm joking. Do you know what I mean? But it's like, it happens and you just got to like keep pressing on, man. Like, yeah, they don't get your humor. Cool. Move. Maybe don't try to be funny next time. And then, I actually tried not to be funny and then I was funny. Yeah, because naturally you're funny.
Yeah.
So that means when you're on stage, you're forcing it. Don't force it, be natural. So I've had loads of kind of conversations with quite a few other people in the industry to kind of get them doing that. But I also do some work in schools. I do like motivational speeches and talks and stuff in schools. I've worked in education as a head of year, head of whole school behaviour and stuff. So any opportunity with me is definitely going to be an empowering one. You're going to leave different.
I love it.
So yeah, man.
It sounds like you do a lot. I always like to ask my guests on the show, do you have any productivity hacks?
Productivity hacks. As much as I've got my hands in different pots, I've only got two hands. So at any particular time, my hand can only be in one or two.
Mm.
And I'm okay with that. So the productivity hack that I want to leave you with is, it's okay not to be juggling, singing, dancing, backflipping all at the same time. So whatever you find your hands doing, just do that until your hands get tired and they need to come out of a pot and go into another pot. So I guess that's what helps me with focus.
I love it.
Yeah.
Would you say you've got a good work-life balance?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah?
Definitely, man.
How do you unwind?
So I've got a studio in the shed. And so when the kids are hyping, they actually don't hype. They'll come in the studio with me, man, and record. They're on it. Like, my daughter is, they're on it. So,
mate, you're ready to get your daughter performing, listen, and keep the coins.
My daddy took my money. I will take my daughter's money. But no, so it's like they love it. Yeah. Like, you know, my daughter's like, oh, daddy, do you have a show today? Okay, all right. Enjoy yourself. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. They know what I do. I've brought them to events. They've seen what their daddy does, daddy does. And yeah, man, I unwind, I travel, I make music that people haven't heard yet, some of them, and some they have.
So are you cooking some music? Is an album coming, EP, what
it's, you not really, I don't think albums are in season at the moment. I think it's just about singles, man, and just like putting music out there. I don't think people have the listening capacity for, it's not pandemic anymore, you know. Wizkid can't release London to Lagos, or Lagos
made
to
in Lagos, whatever. Sorry,
listen, I'm a burner, Davido fan. But Wiz, big up to you, Baba Wiz. But it's like, no one's really listening to albums, man. But yeah, I've got loads of songs that sadly I'm holding on to. I would say my music is probably the most precious, because it's like, when it's gone, I'm not in control of it anymore. So I'm just holding on to it tightly, like to my chest. So I've got brothers like Gabriel, who's like Glover, who's like, listen, bro, just release it, man. I've got brothers like Alim Kamara, who's like, Andy, bro, this track is ready, bro, put it out.
What does your music center around? Because previously you had the gospel album growing up.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, yeah, it was like the spoken word, I suppose, the poetry. So, yeah, where is it now?
I think it's about love, man. It's about love and life. I've got songs about everything, man. I've got a song called Never Give Up. I've got a song called My Love. I've got a song called, some of the songs are not titled, because when you hear it, it's like, it's all love, man. It's all sweet music. Sweet music.
It sounds like it needs to come out. Especially,
it will. I think, well, it's 2024. I released a song in on the 31st of December, 2023.
Yeah.
Called Energy, and that's doing all right on all your local platforms. Download it on Spotify, and yeah, so I've got songs, man, and they're gonna come out. I'm gonna release two songs this year, so
we heard it here.
Yeah, yeah,
minimum two.
So there's one coming out in the summer, and yeah, there'll be another one maybe like November, October, kind of time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you heard it here first. Two songs. When this podcast blows up, we'll be sure to share it. No royalties coming to me. All going to Andy. Where does Andy see himself in the next 5 and 10 years?
Next 5, 10 years.
Manifest it,
yeah. I want to open a school, man.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think the work that I've done in schools, it just says that, you know, I need to be involved in terms of making rules and being the change maker, because
here or back home?
Here and back home. I think like we can't just sit there and accept what we're getting and have issues with it, especially if we have the chance to control the narrative. And the only way to do that is to open our own. So that's the plan.
I love it. Yeah, I love it. Andy, before we get into the quick fire round,
just like
a final piece of advice for anybody looking for inspiration about breaking into the entertainment industry. What would you say to them?
I'll say use what's in your hands, man. Like, social media has made things so much tangible. It's made it tangible. So you don't have to go anywhere. You could just be in your house and record, and that's it. And if you are really funny, if you are really special, somebody will tell you. You will go viral. I mean, let me be very clear. Not everything good goes viral. But I believe that if that's what you want to do, utilize the mediums that are around you. And like I said, the two things that are very hard, sometimes you have to wait. But don't wait being still. Wait while preparing 100%. Until it's your turn.
100%.
And while you're there, just continue to perfect, continue to master, continue to do everything you can to be better at what you do. If you hear of anything, offer your services for free. Nobody else is. So if you do, it will make you special.
Yeah.
So that's what I would say.
I love it. And I don't typically do this, but just to add to what you said there, like, take pride in the small wins.
Mm.
I think everybody wants to... yeah, like, record one video and go viral.
Yeah.
Like you said, not everything good bangs.
Yeah.
But you can't let that dishearten you. You've got to look at the steps as, like, the hours towards mastery. I'm going to use that now.
Moving forward.
Like, it's a big takeaway, man.
Yeah.
I really believe that. Andy, this has been such a sick convo. You ready for the quick fire round?
Yeah, go for it.
Let's go. Music concert or host?
Hosting the music concert.
Nice. Money or happiness?
Happiness.
Would you rather travel to the past or to the future?
To the past.
Yeah. Who has it easier, men or women?
Stress. Men.
Dream dinner guest. I feel like I know this one.
Yeah, Jamie Foxx, isn't it?
And yeah, if you could host one thing that you've not hosted yet, what would it be?
One thing I haven't hosted before, like an award show in America or something.
Okay. Like the Oscars. It could be
Oscars. Yeah.
The VMAs. Yeah, it could be anything.
Yeah, Oscars.
Okay.
Yeah, I host Oscars.
Are we going to go back to a favorite quote? Are you ready?
My favorite quote is, "Do something today that your future self will thank you for."
Jeez, got there. I love it, Andy. We do have a closing tradition on this podcast. With everything that you've been through, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your younger self, and would you still be doing the same thing?
You are enough. Everything you need to do what you need to do is already in you. So believe that you're enough and you'll achieve it.
And would you still be doing the same thing?
I'd still be doing the same thing.
100%. Andy, where can people find you, bro?
At my house, and I'm not going to tell you where that is. at a wedding or at a birthday party online.
Yeah.
I am Simply Andy online. All the socials, all the bits and pieces, man. I've got a website, andysarfo.com, if people still use those. It's a website for you. And yeah, man. I'm going to be in Ghana in October. I'm in Thailand in October.
Wow.
No, November, sorry, November. I'm in... when am I in Jamaica? I don't know. But yeah, so just find me, man. I'm online, so...
find him.
Yeah.
Get a flight. Find him.
Get a flight.
We're going to make sure to share all the socials in the show notes. Guys, if you've gotten to this point in the podcast, you know what to do. Like, subscribe, share, comment. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know who you want to hear from next. Andy, this might have been the most I've laughed, the most I've engaged, the most I've smiled on any podcast I've done. And we've done a lot of episodes. But yeah, thank you so much. This has been another episode of What My Best Friend Does. If you didn't know, now you know. Over and out.